This is an eavesdropping conversation. I'm Juliet Fraser, and today I'm talking to Anna Dennis. Hi, Anna.
Hi, Juliet.
So nice to see you.
You too.
I wonder if you could start by describing yourself as an artist. I did some Google stalking of you, and I see that you don't have a website, but there's so much amazing text about you online as an artist, and I wondered what your own words would be.
I am a singer. I'm a soprano. I sing a lot of opera, a lot of other sorts of music on different scales, although the weight of my repertoire is kind of at either end of it. It's mostly very new music or quite old music, but it meets a little bit, you know, it's not just confined to that.
And beyond that, as an artist?
Yeah, I was thinking about this because I think that the title or the sort of the word artist can seem as applied to a performer. You know, maybe we sometimes don't see ourselves in that light. I feel like a kind of stealth creator, or I feel like a sort of a catalyst or a prism. And if I look back through the stuff I've done, it's undeniable that I've had a lot of creative input. And I'm not just talking about contemporary music, although that's the most kind of conspicuous way. But even when I do, you know, when I do Baroque music, and there's so much space for improvisation in that, and for putting your own musical kind of character into the shapes and the kind of what you come up with da capo ornamentation and stuff. So in those terms, I suppose, yeah, a sort of friend as well. I was thinking about that because a lot of these ongoing, collaborative, fruitful relationships really, you know, they're professional, but they really are predicated on friendship and understanding with composers, I think. And then that leads me to recognize that there are other times where you feel that there's a weight of creativity about producing creative ideas where that's not quite recognized, and you feel like there's a kind of unrecognized element to how much you are only being seen as a performer, but you know that there has been a creative role. So that it's a sort of spectrum from really, you know, friendship and a sort of harmonious overlapping of performer and creative, you know, the person who has the full creative responsibility, to something which is more sort of tricky. Yeah, your question, it gave me a lot of things to think about, actually.
Well, that's amazing. You've dived in right into some murky depths there. And what was your path? How have you come to be doing this?
When I was a child, my parents took me to hear a lot of music, and they had friends who were musicians. And so we went quite a lot to the opera. I went to opera from when I was quite little. And something really, really captured my imagination about opera. And from an embarrassingly early age, I said, I want to be a singer from about the age of six. And then I just always had this really loud voice. And I knew it was like having a, you know, some people at school are good at running or something. I didn't go to school with really good music at all, but I knew I could sing really loudly. And it just seemed like the obvious thing to do.
Is volume the most important thing, Anna?
But it's at a little age, having a really clear voice when you do a lot of collective singing, I suppose. And I'm not talking about high quality collective singing. I'm talking about, you know, autumn days when the grass is dewed and that kind of thing. But in that sense, it always felt like an obvious thing to do, sort of. Mm. And then I went really, really early, just after school, I went to music college. I spent a long time at the academy, really feeling very limited and depressed and wanting to leave the whole time.
Oh,
but
no.
somehow staying on for years and years and years. And in order to sort of identify myself, I think, and because I reacted quite strongly against the type of people who were studying singing who didn't seem at all like me, I kind of really put out my flags as a singer of complicated cerebral music. And I mean, to my own disablement, really, because the sorts of people that were on hand and the sorts of expertise that were on hand really weren't equipped to help me with that. And so sometimes I was really kicking myself. That's what I did. And then that was a kind of also, after I left the academy, that was enabled me to have steps immediately into kind of contemporary opera. One of my colleagues at the academy, who was a composer there called Leona Langer, became composer in association at the Almeida, just overlapping with when I ended my studies. And she cast me in some operas there. So I sort of, that seemed to be my realm, sort of.
It's a familiar story. I mean, maybe it's obvious that it's the sort of story that I would hear because I suppose I'm that sort of person as well. But it's a familiar story, sadly, the sense that people don't feel that they fit in during their studies. And perhaps after all this time, we can feel more relaxed about it because it's somehow nudged us into less traditional areas or areas outside the mainstream anyway, outside the narrow path perhaps of just doing opera.
Yeah, but I mean, actually narrow path reminds me of the fact that I always felt that even from the first music college can be very, it feels like from the first day, it's like racehorses and the, you know, they sort of like, and the, even I remember having such a strong sense of who were the sort of anointed, you know, where people were on some kind of league table. And in that sense, it really is like a vocational training. And yeah. I think if you're the kind of person who has, you know, quite wide interests intellectually, it can feel very sort of stifling.
Mm. Tell us a bit more about those wide interests. I'm thinking about the word experimental, because if there's anything that ties together the very different sorts of artists that I bring to eavesdropping, then it is that experimental approach to any genre, really. But it's not a word that's very often associated with opera. So what does it mean to you, or how does it connect with the way that you approach your music making?
If I think about what kind of really excited me in my sort of teenage years and in my studies, when I was reading about, you know, when I would go to the library and read about things, I was really, really excited by futurist, you know, performances and by Dadaism.
Yeah.
and by, you know, these very, you know, kind of these manifestations of a kind of whole, you know, a symbiosis of a kind of whole intellectual response to performance. And actually, I think that opera is very unique in being, it's in some ways it kind of represents that approach better than any other form. And it's kind of, there's this kind of paradox where it's, you know, this sort of artificiality or the traditions of opera, and its kind of freedom from constraints of realism, or, you know, its kind of elasticity of time. Mm. And it really lends itself to these very immersive, very, well, kind of very eccentric sort of and very collaborative. And I think that in some ways, when I go to see things, theatre can seem, I mean, dramatic theatre can seem like a very limited form in comparison to opera.
Yeah.
And in terms of kind of experimental potential, there's a multiplicity of ways in which opera can be experimental. And you can have, you know, even if just confining ourselves to modern opera, you know, there are examples with really experimental, you know, where the dramaturgy or the text is really experimental, really abstract, and the music is really not really experimental, or it's kind of digestible in a way that can lend focus to the dramaturgy or the, you know, mm-hmm. And then there are examples with really quite straightforward narrative scenarios with incredibly abstract music. And I sort of find all of those variables really fascinating. And I find that there's a kind of, you know, when you work on new repertoire, there's this kind of really interesting triangle. Well, no, it's more than a triangle. It's kind of the composer, the librettist. Well, mostly it's the composer, librettist, director. And there is such a kind of push me, pull me kind of triangularity about that and about where things go. And then there's a kind of subsidiary level. And well, I don't think conductors would like to hear themselves be called subsidiary, but there are all of these things and all of these elements. And even, you know, and then you get this kind of ludicrous level where there can be these unpredictabilities of some massive prop or a wig or something that just blows everything off course or becomes a feature in spite, you know, without anybody. And I love this sort of serendipity of all of these elements coming together. And I think that it does really lend it room to be really experimental.
I think you're making a really compelling case for this. I feel quite excited by the idea of a sort of 21st century Dadaist revival of experimental opera. I wonder if you could spear that down for us. Definitely with enormous wigs. And what is it about that playfulness and perhaps instability that excites you, do you think?
Well, I mean, there's the element of really being aware that you are a kind of advocate, or not an advocate, a sort of, you know, that some of this responsibility falls with your characterization or how you inhabit the music and the role and how successful. I feel like I've been in so many new operas where it, you know, sometimes I've really, really felt like that I am not able to follow, I don't feel that I can commit to what the vision of the composer is, and I've had to find my own sort of route through, or the director, because if you don't feel intellectually committed to it, and that's really interesting, I think, because you just have to make your own adventure, sort of, for an audience. You know, and even some of these quite ludicrous scenarios, or they're so potent because they really stay with you. And I've had examples of things like, I talked to someone whose boyfriend a few years ago, she was telling me that her boyfriend worked on an oil rig, and I felt like, hold on, I've worked on an oil rig, I had this sense like, I know about that. And then I sort of pinned it down and realized that I'd done this piece where I was on an oil rig. But it was so funny. It sort of communicated itself on some deep level to the fact to me that I knew, had some knowledge of this scenario. But in a way you do, because you sort of have made your own path into. I mean, I'm not saying in any kind of representative way, but...
You are, in fact, a method actor.
I'm talking about it just in terms of the potency of the kind of operatic experience, actually.
Mm.
Totally totally ridiculous, but it's true.
Okay, we've talked quite a lot about opera, but I know that's not all of what you do. So I'm wondering what you're listening to or what you're excited by or what's inspiring you at the moment that might give us a fuller picture of the many different facets of Anna Dennis.
Yeah, I do a lot of Baroque music, and I feel like as a singer, I know my craft and I move in that world, and it's interestingly, singers are kind of liberated to some extent from the kind of incredibly nitty-gritty orthodoxy of kind of authentic performance practice. Or I like to think that they are, because I feel like the most authentic thing that you can do as a singer is communicate a text, and that would be true then and that would be true now, and that if you don't do that, there's no authenticity to it. But in those, I'm often around really granular level discussions about instrumentation and about with people debating like the thickness and tension of gut strings and things like that. And while I have sort of infinite respect for the scholarship, and I sometimes feel like I'd like to approach that kind of music in a different sort of way, which is why I've been sort of experimenting with a bit of that sort of repertoire recently. The other thing recently that's been a big influence on me is that I have my boyfriend's brother runs a jazz improvisation series, which I've been going to when I can go to. And it is really an extraordinary thing. They have three sets in the evening. The first is with two players, and the second is with three, and then the last one is with all five. And it has been really, it's made a massive impression on me to watch those kind of relationships in real time. And often they haven't met before, and you are kind of party to this process or this sort of communication happening that's really magical. And there have been elements of improvisation in my sort of practice over the years, but to me this is like seeing a fabulous athletics, or it's like seeing, you know, it's something really magical and really, you know, it's related to what I do, but it's kind of confounding and amazing. And I think in the privacy of my own home, I sometimes just like to see where things go or imagine myself into that sort of space of, it's not just permission. It's a very complicated thing. I think for classical singers, and we're so drilled into this relationship with sort of preparation, and that's been a real fascination for me recently.
So what I'm hearing is an experimentation with early music that is freer, let's say, and also an experimentation with finding your own improvisatory language.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's pretty exciting. Those are two pretty big areas of experimentation. That's brilliant. And is any of this likely to show up at eavesdropping?
Yeah.
Give us a glimpse of what you might be sharing with us.
So I have been working on sort of reframing some old music. Yeah, trying to sort of free myself from my normal instincts when I sit down and you know what I see on a score when I'm learning a score, and when I see a figured bass line, and you know what my instincts are to do with that. And so I've been working on some things like that, and I've been working with a couple.
What's old music, Anna?
Old music, yeah. in these terms is 17th century music and some earlier music too.
So people like?
People like Barbara Strozzi.
Oh, we love Barbara Strozzi. How delicious.
And Hildegard of Bingen even.
Okay, strong.
Oldie, oldie.
Great.
I am experimenting with playing some games with two composers that I collaborate with, or I have collaborated with a lot over the years. And they're quite different people in terms of their backgrounds and their music. And I want to use the same sort of process with them both and see what that sort of throws up.
This sounds great. So it sounds like a sort of a portrait set, perhaps a glimpse into Anna that you might share with us. So we're going to have some new works, some new collaborative works, and some new imaginings of old works. That sounds very tantalizing. Well, thanks, Anna. Thanks for sharing all of that with us. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I really look forward to hearing what you've been working on. And Anna will be performing on Saturday, the 23rd of March at Café Otto. So thanks so much, Anna.
A pleasure.
You have been listening to an eavesdropping conversation. Our new jingle was composed for us by Iza Otoya.